Hello, I'm Dr. Sarah Jarvis, and welcome to the Hepcast, a podcast series about the people fighting to eliminate viral hepatitis, a virus that affects 350 million people worldwide. In our third episode of Series 2, we'll explore viral hepatitis within prison settings and interventions and experiences of people living with viral hepatitis in prison. Joining us today, we have three passionate advocates who can shed some light on what this experience can be like for people who are incarcerated and how we can improve practices to ensure that we really do eliminate viral hepatitis in prisons. Joining me today, I am delighted to welcome, first and foremost, Clive Williams. He served as peer support lead in the south of England, and he works with the Hepatitis C Trust. That's a UK-based charity, and it's advocating on behalf of people who are living with hepatitis C. Clive previously lived with hepatitis C, and he was treated and cured while he was in prison. Dr. Sanjay Sarin is the Vice President of Access at the Foundation for Innovative New Diagnostics, a global non-profit organisation that aims to accelerate the development and delivery of affordable diagnostic tests and equipment for poverty-related diseases. Dr. John May is President of Health Through Walls, which helps low-income countries implement sustainable improvements to the healthcare service of their prisons. He's very well qualified to have this position because he has been practicing medicine in prisons for almost 30 years. John works with prison authorities in these countries to implement sustainable systems to develop their capacity to provide people who are incarcerated with meaningful healthcare services. That could be medical screening, could be treatment, could be discharge planning. And of course, that allows continuity of care upon release. He's also a board member of the International Corrections and Prisons Association, North America. So, Clive, if I may, I'd really like to start with you first. You are someone who has lived experience, and I think it's essential that we start really with that experience so that we can get a picture of what it's like. So, Clive, can you tell us a bit about your role at the Hepatitis C Trust and what encouraged you to become an advocate for viral hepatitis?
So my role, I see it as a supporting services role. So we are like a bridge between service users and the services, NHS in particular, local drug services, hostels, rehabilitation centres. We are the bridge, and that's how I like to describe my role. And I feel because we've been there, we connect with service users on a different level, and we're able to hold their hand. We call it follow me. We're able to hold their hand through the process and help them get treated.
So people who are being screened and treated for hepatitis C in prison, while you were in the prison system, were inmates routinely screened for viral hepatitis?
Not at all. So actually, part of my job, I get to go into prisons now, and any community clients that I've been supporting that have been arrested or in custody, I can go and visit them, have a chat with them in their cell, bring them down to healthcare, see how they're getting on. It varies from prison to prison. In my experience right now, some prisons are routinely screening, others are not. I think it's becoming more accepted now. That's the way forward, is to screen everyone. But in my day, no, you had to request, or you had to be having a blood test for something else, and hep C testing would have been part of that screening. But yeah, it's definitely becoming more frequent, and lots of different prisons are adopting that now.
Great to hear. Of course, that's your experience, and it sounds very much as if that's the experience in the UK. But John, I'm going to come to you, if I may, and ask about your role in the La Victoria Prison Project and what that project's aiming to do. Are you looking there at improving access to screening as well as other things?
Absolutely. So I'm a physician in internal medicine who's practiced in jails and prisons for nearly 30 years. Our NGO, Health Through Walls, has been assisting the prison program of the Dominican Republic for 15, 20 years now. Hepatitis C screening and treatment was not part of any of the protocols until just recently. So it was this effort we call the La Victoria Prison Project that allowed us, in working partnership with the prison authorities of the Dominican Republic, to screen all of the incarcerated persons in that prison, which is the largest prison in the entire Caribbean, for hepatitis C, and then connect them into care and treatment.
Can you tell me a little bit about your journey? Because this is clearly a really important thing to be doing, and I completely understand you are president of Health Through Walls. But what was the transition between doing that, which is all involved in helping low-income countries implement sustainable improvements to healthcare, and the La Victoria Prison Project looking at screening for hepatitis C?
Well, it starts with having a good foundation. We've learned over the years, tackling any infectious disease within prisons, be it HIV or tuberculosis or hepatitis C, you have to have a system in place, a way to routinely screen those who are first coming in, the ways to identify those who may be having symptoms, the ways to educate the healthcare staff so they know how to address the laboratory findings and the treatments that are needed for the patients. You need cooperation from the authorities to recognize the importance of health screening and facilitate movements of those incarcerated to so they can get to the clinics, to the treatment. So it's quite an elaborate systems-based process is what correctional medicine is. It's setting up systems to take care of an entire population. For many years, we've been doing quite successfully HIV screening, education, prevention, and treatment within that prison. Again, it's the largest in all of the Caribbean. So the foundation was in place to now add hepatitis C screening and treatment in the same way.
Fascinating. So Clive, does that resonate with you, that kind of progression?
Absolutely. It's definitely a kind of accepted way forward now. And so one of the things that we do in England with the prison, so the screening's offered to everybody. However, you get some people that refuse. They do not want to be screened. They don't want to be tested for hep C. So when we come into the prison, we get a list of people who refuse the screening, and we'll go and speak to them individually. And sometimes it's through shame. Some people just don't want to be tested. They didn't want to engage. The timing was wrong. And a conversation with us, we can encourage them, motivate them to come and get a test, and we can eliminate the list of people who didn't get tested, which is why they can say, they have a term that they use, micro-elimination. So in a prison setting, micro-elimination would be everyone in the prison, 800 people, was tested for hep C. That's the kind of stuff we would do. We'd focus on those people who didn't take the test, who didn't want it. But yeah, it's definitely becoming more popular now.
And Clive, do you find that when you have those conversations, firstly, that your lived experience helped, but secondly, that people do tend to be receptive and agree after a conversation with you?
I think you have to also be able to read people, because I think timing's a big thing. Number one, definitely, we share our story. We share our experience, the importance of being screened, that you can have it for years and just not know, that you don't have to have used the needle. You don't have to have done some of the typical things that people think are ways of catching hep C, and you could have it. So we have these little conversations privately, as discreetly as possible, because there is a lot of stigma in prison settings. But yeah, definitely, that is a big thing, sharing our experience. These guys know that we've been to prison. I've spent over 15 years in prison. So when we're speaking to some of these people, it really makes a difference.
I don't have any doubt about that whatsoever. I know it's a very different perspective, but I completely understand how much difference that makes. Sanjay, can I come to you? I know I've already said that you're the Vice President of Access at the Foundation for Innovative New Diagnostics. If it's right, I think we'll call it FIND, if we may. You also have very much an interest in this area, and you, I believe, started up the first program of your kind. Can you tell us a little bit about your role at FIND and what the aim of the organization is in the bigger picture?
Yeah, thanks, Sarah. So when we started this project, actually, I, at that point of time, was managing FIND's operations. So hepatitis was a relatively new disease for us to get into. And frankly, we envisaged this program because we were hearing so much about the challenges across the world. And this, I believe, is a challenge across, it's not just the low and middle income countries, even in the high income countries, as Clive and John just mentioned. I think this is a problem that is all prevalent. and started talking to a few donors, and we got some money from UNITAID, which is a Geneva-based donor, and they were keen for us to implement programs in a few countries where the problem was particularly acute. And the focus at that point was not actually on the incarcerated population. The focus was largely on the key populations, for example, people living with HIV and then people who inject drugs. So I was essentially engaged in the implementation of this program in India. And India is a large country, and the prevalence of HCV ranges anywhere between 1% to 2% in the general population. And when you come to those who are living with HIV, the prevalence was, you know, almost about 8 to 10%. And this was all anecdotal information because no systematic interventions had been carried out in the country. And there was obviously certainly a lack of any published literature. So we started talking to the government of Punjab, which is up north. And that is one state where the general population actually is 3 times that of the average prevalence in the country. They have about 3.4% in Punjab. And they already had a nice hepatitis C program going on, but the focus was on the general population. So we spoke to them about this key population and would there be an interest in working with the people who are living with HIV, as there is a large population of people we know, because of the common routes of transmission, would be at high risk. They had some anecdotal information wherein they'd done some initial surveys around antibody testing for hepatitis C and had found it to be prevalence to be particularly high in this population. And that is when we set the ball rolling. So that kind of went well. And it was, in fact, the project with the incarcerated population also, the origins were in Punjab itself, because we started having these conversations with them. In Punjab, there is a very acute problem of drug usage. The majority of the people who are incarcerated in the prisons are actually under the narcotic drugs and psychotropic substances. They are normally getting arrested because of the porosity of the border, obviously, with Pakistan, and also drugs coming in from Afghanistan. And again, they had some unpublished data wherein they had found the prevalence in Punjab prisons of HCV to be anywhere between 10 to 20%, which was obviously very acute. And they'd been trying very hard to establish a program. So the challenge here was that the prisons obviously are managed by the Department of Home Affairs, while HCV falls under the ambit of the health department. So we were in fact talking to the health department folks, and they in turn put us in touch with the guys who were managing the prisons department. And that is when we set the ball rolling. What we were pleasantly surprised that the Ministry of Home Affairs was also equally concerned about this key population, and they had been trying for long to do something in this space. I guess it clicked for us, because in order for us to be able to implement the program in these settings, it required a lot of alignment between the two departments, which was obviously one of the success factors. So as far as my role is concerned, it was largely around providing oversight and establishing the partnerships with both the health department as well as the prisons department. And
John, can I come to you on the back of that really fascinating discussion with Sanjay? I'm quite sure that what he was talking about there would have resonated a little bit with you in terms of the number of people who were in prison as a result of drug misuse problems, or perhaps people who developed drug misuse problems while they're in. But certainly either way, I think at the La Victoria project, it's likely, I suspect, that you had many of the same issues.
No, absolutely. What Sanja discussed and Clive too are two of the key ingredients to making these sorts of projects successful. We're recognizing that the population of those who are incarcerated are very high risk. As Clive said, it's not always necessarily related directly to injection drug use, but there are other risk factors and there's other reasons people may be infected. But certainly drug use and the need for treatment there goes hand in hand with what's necessary for HIV and hepatitis C care and treatment. So engaging the ministries of health, engaging peer educators, those who can relate to those who are incarcerated, are really key factors in successful hepatitis C care and treatment in prison settings.
Now, you've already mentioned that the La Victoria Penitentiary is the Caribbean's largest prison. You didn't make it easy for yourself, did you, by starting small? But why that one?
We'd like to go where the need is the greatest, and that's where it has been. As I say, we've been working there for many years on issues of tuberculosis and HIV throughout the whole Caribbean. This is the largest, with more than or nearly 8,000 adult male prisoners. So we've had systems in place with peer education, again, as Clive relates that importance with teams of folks who are trained as health promoters who can go in and reach their peers about the importance of different health screenings. That again lays the groundwork for what needs to happen with other diseases such as hepatitis C. And the partnerships that have already been established that we had in the Dominican Republic, we work with a group called Foundation Genesis, which is the local implementer of this program. And they work very successfully with the ministries of health there and the prison authorities in the Dominican Republic. And we're able to bring everyone together so that we can have a unified approach to this issue.
Thank you. Clive, I'm going to come to you because we've heard some amazing examples of projects being implemented in prison. But you've said when you were in prison, hepatitis C screening was not the norm. So what encouraged you to get tested?
So for me, Sarah, it was quite a long journey, actually. I first found out that I had hepatitis C whilst in custody, I believe around 2002, maybe. I'd got injured in prison and gone to hospital for something completely different. They'd done a blood test and then I was speaking to a specialist. They said, oh, you've got chronic hepatitis C. I had heard of it, but I didn't know anything about it.
Can I just clarify that? Were you told you were going to get some blood tests, but did you get tested without being asked, or did you just not understand the implications when they said what they were testing you for?
So yeah, I've had a blood test as part of an operation I was having on a broken bone. I think it was just routine and I may have been screened for hep C, but what I do remember, because it's quite a long time ago, is that I was called in, I was spoken to, and they said, you've got chronic hepatitis C. And I was pretty young at the time. I was in my 30s and I remember being terrified.
So very clearly, completely different to the experience that you now want people to have. You want them to understand what the implications of being tested are. And of course, the fact that it's a treatable condition.
Absolutely.
Speaking of which, have you completed treatment? If so, when?
I have. And as I was saying earlier, a very long journey for me. Those days you had a liver biopsy and they came back and said, your liver's in great shape. And I kind of used that to not address the hepatitis C because they said it affects your liver, but your liver's perfect. And I kind of used that as the way to just feed my denial and just, I'll deal with it. They said you can have it for 20 years. So I kind of used it as an excuse to deal with it later. And that was what happened. Over the years, it was always with me. It was always in my mind because I've been told I've got this serious liver disease, but I'd start the process. I'd go to one appointment. I'd get really anxious, really scared. I wouldn't go back for a year or two. And that kept happening. And in those days, there were a lot of obstacles to actually getting treated. It was not as simple as it is today. Today, I think people are really lucky. Certainly in the area I work in, we can find someone today. They could be treated within 3 months and cleared within six. So that's what kept happening for me. I just couldn't face it. I was really struggling with it. I had a partner who didn't know anything about drugs and I kept that from her. So that was quite painful, not being able to talk about hep C because I didn't know much about it. I just knew that it was a serious thing. And in the end, I ended up moving into a hostel and I lived with a guy who was taking the treatment in those days for hepatitis C, which is what I kept trying to start the process for, but I could never get through all the obstacles because there were too many. Anyway, I got to see firsthand the side effects and that really put me off. It really put me off taking this medication. Okay. So that went on for quite a few years until I got treated with the new medication.
So that's really interesting, isn't it? That what you had was a perception of, on the one hand, it's a chronic condition. On the other hand, my liver's fine. It could be years. And then you saw that perhaps the downsides, the side effects of treatment, but not the side effects of not being treated. Sanjay, I'm going to come to you, if I may, and just ask, how can healthcare professionals, Sanjay, and indeed other prison workers, better support people who are living with hepatitis in prison?
I think in the prisons, what we observed, that initially the population was obviously a bit reluctant. So initially, it took us a bit to get around the problem. And this required that we sensitize the prison's officials, we sensitize the medical staff which was engaged in the prisons, because these were the people who were in regular contact with the inmates. And hence, it was absolutely critical for these folks to be educated about what hepatitis is, how people can get diagnosed and how easily they can access treatment and in fact, get completely rid of the virus. So as a part of the project, we had these sensitization meetings with the top prisons officials. We did a lot of training in capacity building of the folks in the prisons. In fact, one of the challenges which we faced in the prisons was that they would very regularly push out the medical staff. And this was because people would use influence and would, you know, get voluntarily transferred because they didn't want to work in those conditions for a long time. So it obviously meant that we had to train and retrain and orient the staff for a long time on a continuous basis. And the other aspect is that once we got around to this, they also allowed us to have conversations with the prison folks, and we organized these formal and informal conversations with those who were living inside. And once we had a sizable number of prisoners who had gotten themselves screened and some of them who were already accessing treatment, we got these people to actually speak to their fellow inmates that they're really not experiencing any side effects and these are simply oral pills and they can take it in the comfort of their cells, and there are no routine investigations that they need to undergo on a regular basis. And unlike HIV, this is completely treatable. So I think it was a mix of these three things. One, sensitizing the prison's officials, and then working very closely with the medical staff within the prisons and training and retraining them. And once we had a sizable population who had been screened and put on treatment, also making sure that these are the people who in turn are having conversations with their peers to make them more aware of the challenges or not as far as access to diagnostics and treatment is concerned.
John, let me come to you because that makes perfect sense, what we've just heard Sanjay say. Firstly, educate the prison staff, but then make sure that the people who might be putting themselves forward for treatment understand the risks and the benefits of treatment, but also importantly, the fact that, you know, it was perhaps the treatments are well tolerated, and then maybe get people they trust, perhaps other people who've gone through treatment. Are they the same sort of factors that you've used in your project to make it a success?
Yeah, it's nice to see these universal approaches throughout the world. So indeed, whether you're a high income country, low income country, middle income country, such as the Dominican Republic, this is what it takes. People are people, right? So an incarcerated person is going to meet outsiders with some element of mistrust, and yet they certainly have concerns about their own health and well-being. And so if they can hear from each other, from their peers, about what certain health conditions might be about and how they can protect themselves or how they can access treatment, they're more open to those answers. The correctional officers and those who are responsible for security and control in those settings need to also buy into the program. They need to recognize that we're all in this together. They need to understand why screening is important, why testing is needed, and why they need to support the treatment. We're not going to succeed in any treatments without the cooperation of the correctional staff. And for health practitioners in the same way, particularly without a lot of experience in managing hepatitis C. In fact, the access to these medications in the Dominican Republic is relatively new. And so there was a launch of a lot of educational campaigns. So indeed, all those components are important to making it succeed. And if I could add, in fact, you asked before about why we chose La Victoria Penitentiary. And as far as we know, throughout the entire Caribbean, there are few, if any, prison systems that routinely screened for hepatitis C presently. None of them had large blitzes like we had at the La Victoria Penitentiary. But again, it's where the need is the most. And we felt that's why we need to get there. But recognize, please, that it's not easy. This prison is probably one of the toughest in all of the Caribbean as far as infrastructure and degree of overcrowding and violence even that occurs within the walls of that penitentiary. The Dominican Republic has a very forward-thinking reform model of prisons, and many of their prison sites have gone through this transformation and are real models of care now with rehabilitation efforts and training. But La Victoria has not yet been touched by this transformation. And it's a very tough place. And to make all of these pieces work together, it was a lot of collaboration.
Was the structure of the prison the biggest challenge, or were there other challenges as well?
You know, in fact, it probably was the biggest challenge, just the logistics, right? How do you go about screening 8,000 persons? We can do about 200, 250 people per day, moving dormitory to dormitory or housing unit to housing unit. With COVID during all this time too, the movements were restricted and you had to set up plans of action to try not to mix certain populations. Just keeping track of all those people, who's been tested, who has not been tested. Let's match up their names to their medical files, to their prison identification numbers, etc. Moving volunteers in and out who do the education and do the screening and do the testing. It took a whole team to do this over a period of several months. So yeah, the logistics within the prison itself was probably one of the largest challenges.
Logistics are a challenge everywhere, but I have to say I don't envy you that. Well done you for persevering. Clive, please.
John, number one, I'm so glad I didn't end up in the type of prison you're describing. Obviously, I know in different parts of the world, the populations are a lot bigger. Typically in England, I think the biggest population I've seen is probably about 1,000. But yeah, what you described there, for me personally, I feel like bringing staff on board, especially the prison officers, is really key because there is a lot of stigma in prison. And even to this day, we get a lot of people, they don't want anyone to overhear the conversation. They'll shut down or snap. If we go and knock on someone's cell door, we won't say the Hep C Trust. We just won't mention, we just say healthcare, stuff like that. But people get to know us.
I'm really glad that you mentioned that stigma aspect because it's something you touched on earlier on. And clearly you have a very different perspective, a very personal perspective. Do you mind if I ask about your personal experience of stigma, maybe from other inmates or prison workers?
Absolutely. So I definitely was ashamed. I felt shame. I didn't want to talk about it. And I think part of that is didn't have enough education around Hep C. It wasn't discussed as it is today. We go into rehabs now and take the group and educate. That's part of what we do. We educate people on hepatitis C, how it affects the body, the treatment that's available, the pathway. The treatment pathway is key. And, you know, what I love about what we do is the follow me part. That's how we describe it. I've been here where you are right now. I can show you the way out. And that's a big part of what the Hep C Trust do. And we have amazing stories of success off the back of that peer support.
I'm fascinated by that because one of the questions I was going to ask was, what do you think can be done to stop it being stigmatized? And very clearly what you're saying is community advocates such as yourself make a huge difference.
Communication, more discussion around it. If I meet someone when we're testing and they're positive, I always say this to them. I say, look, it's win-win. If we test you and you're negative, great, fantastic. Move on. Tackle a different problem in your life because we've all got lots of problems. If you're positive, fantastic. We can treat it. So it's a win-win and it's really simple now. It's not like years ago where you had to be clean. You had to be stable. You had to attend a certain amount of appointments. We can literally see somebody once, get them a full assessment, medical assessment, screening, fiber scan, and deliver their meds to them. They don't need to attend any more appointments. And that's beautiful because in my day, it wasn't like that.
You really do paint a much more positive picture. But sadly, of course, these things aren't always straightforward. And perhaps in some other countries, there are, as we've heard, different challenges. So yeah. I'd like to come to you, if I may, Sanjay, and talk specifically about the challenges that you faced in your hepatitis screening program and how you've overcome them.
So I think in terms of challenges, even though there was an initial alignment between the two departments, that is the Home Affairs or the Prisons Department, as well as the Health Department, I think it's still time for us to get administrative approvals because the flow of information from the Health Ministry to the prisons and then from the, you know, top bosses at the Prisons Departments into the respective prisons, I think that took a bit of time. But eventually we were able to manage that because both the parties were very willing to move forward with the intervention. I think some of the practical challenges which we faced, and obviously, as I said, there are a high percentage of the population that was incarcerated on account of drug offenses. So I think something as simple as drawing blood from their veins, it was really challenging because the veins were already very frazzled. But fortunately, we had trained phlebotomists and they were able to do the job with keeping still without giving a huge discomfort to the inmates. Then the other piece was, while the project was essentially supporting the diagnostics intervention, I think we were taking care of the screening and we were taking care of the confirmatory testing, but for the drugs, we were still dependent on the health department and sometimes coordinating with the health department to ensure that we were dealing with multiple prisons. For example, in Punjab, we were dealing with 19 prisons, and at times it would be difficult to manage the supply chain and some of the practical challenges to, because, you know, while the system was pretty well set to take care of the general population, but the specific group, the prisons were still not capacitated. And sometimes we had challenges in terms of storing laboratory consumables within the lab premises because there was a risk that they might get stolen. So we had to actually outsource even the basic phlebotomy services to an external laboratory. It took a little bit of time for us to seek the permissions to get those folks into the prisons because of the security issues, but we were eventually able to manage that. Then I think this is something which I touched upon previously. There was a pretty high turnover of the prison medical staff, which required us to continuously engage them, train and retrain them, as that was a critical part of the intervention. And the other challenge which we faced was that, in fact, majority of the population that is incarcerated in the Indian prisons is actually under trial. So a lot of times these guys can get bail and get released. And if some of these guys have already started accessing treatment, then it was particularly tricky for us to be able to track these inmates because A, they were no longer inmates, and sometimes they would give false addresses. So I think gradually we were able to not overcome that fully. I think that continued to remain one of the biggest challenges of the project, to be able to track those who were being released on bail or were being paroled out. But it required a strong coordination with the health department, with other officials at the district level, to be able to trace and track these patients and ensure that they stay on treatment.
Thank you very much. It makes perfect sense from what you're saying, and I'm quite sure that John has experienced similar. I'm going to come back to you, Clive, if I may. Do you think prisons need guidelines to make sure that viral hepatitis screening is implemented on a mass scale, as we've heard from Sanjay and John?
Absolutely. I'd agree with that statement. So we find that treatment process pathway can vary slightly from area to area in England. So someone could get treated pretty quickly within a few weeks and complete their treatment within 6 months. And then other areas, they can be waiting 3 to 6 months just to get started. But I do think so, because I see the prisons that are routinely screening, generating a list of people who refused a hepatitis C test. And then they've got our teams, the prison teams, that can go and individually speak to these people. I think it's amazing, because we are actually finding that some of those people are people that we want to see, that are known to NHS, or that are people that did not attend an appointment and that have stories. You know, you get told you've got hepatitis C and you'll attach your own meaning to it, which is where education and communication comes in. Because a lot of the time when we speak to people, we can help them understand that some of the stories in your mind about it are not true. Actually, this is the reality. This is the data. This is the education, and help people come to reality and see a way forward. So we are finding people through that process, and our prison team, they work with the healthcare in prisons. We also deliver staff training, because we find that even people in this field, their knowledge of Hep C varies from person to person. Some people work in services and they've got very limited knowledge. Others have quite extensive. So we offer staff training, prison staff, rehabilitation center staff, drug services staff. So that's part of my role. Actually, we train staff as well as peers so that people are up to date. So they understand the treatments, they understand the stigmas, the kind of process that someone would have to go through, what it looks like. So yeah, I'd like to see that as standard across the board, because we've found so many people through the prisons in particular that are offering it to everybody. I hope that answers your question, Sarah.
That answered my question perfectly. And I want to come to John now, because I know that you have health promoters who in many respects are doing exactly what Clive has been talking about here. Tell us a little bit about those.
The health promoters are teams of incarcerated persons who demonstrate leadership and often have a lot of charisma and not afraid to be public speakers. And so we pull them together and offer training. We train them on disease processes, on health prevention topics. We've connected with groups in other countries, in fact, using technology, something called Project Echo, where they can meet with peers from other countries even and learn from each other. And this enthusiasm that they have then allows them to carry into the general population of the prison and share and encourage others to get tested and treated.
I'm fascinated by this. So they don't necessarily have to have hepatitis C themselves. They have to be people who are recognized as being charismatic, if you like, and would be listened to and be prepared to get involved in promoting health screening and so on.
That's right. We don't necessarily require or need someone to have direct experience with the condition. Of course, those who have it and are willing to disclose and discuss with others, it might make a bigger impact to others, but we find that they can be just equally effective just by being a peer, sharing the experiences, understanding what it's really like to be incarcerated and cut off from family often and other support services that you might have.
Clive, I can see from your body language you heartily agree with everything John's just said.
Absolutely. I think I can't emphasize enough. How I know this is from anecdotal evidence, from texts, from emails, from staff, nurses that have come to us and said, we have been trying to get this person for 15 years. How did you get them? How did you engage them? Even now, it warms my heart because there are historic people out there that just won't engage. They're in a lot of denial. They're in a lot of shame. They don't have the right information. And yeah, especially in the prison setting. And so I recruit and train volunteers. I have a team of volunteers with my team. We're always looking for people that have been through the treatment process, that are stable, that can commit to some activities with us. And we try and help them on a road to development and maybe work. I certainly got this job through voluntary. I volunteered for 8 months and got a job as a peer support lead. I feel like it's so important.
I suspect with your passion, it's difficult to say no to you. I certainly hope it is.
This can be the difference, yeah.
Sanjay, can I come to you and ask about the future from the perspective of your project? You've clearly undertaken some huge logistical challenges and indeed largely overcome them. So tell us about your future plans for the program.
I'm very happy to share that we were, in fact, granted a little bit of an extension on the project. And originally, we were supposed to implement this in one state, but we were able to manage 2 states and a union territory. And then we had some funds left and we wanted to implement this in the national capital territory of India, that is in the city of Delhi, which in fact has one of the largest prisons in Asia. So we recently found out that because of the work that's happened in these prisons and the fact that where it has happened, these people have been advocating and we've also been talking to the officials at the National AIDS Control Organization, for example, in India. And so there is this one large donor, the Global Fund, which has been supporting some programs in viral hepatitis across the countries, although they're traditionally more around HIV. So what we have just found out is that as a result of these interventions now, the first good thing that has happened is that HCV testing has been included in the prisons, which means that essentially everyone who walks into the prisons would have access to testing. There is a national viral hepatitis control program that we have, and they have taken note of this and are keen to implement these interventions across the prisons in the country. And there is this donor which is now willing to support the engagement. I mean, exactly the kind of stuff that we did, that is sensitization of the prison's officials and working with the medical staff within the prisons as well as with the inmates. That is the software elements of the project, whereas the commodities, both from a diagnostics and a drugs standpoint, would be taken care of by the respective state governments in the states. But this is something which is just starting, and we do not expect that everything is going to change in a day. I think it will still require some sort of a handholding with the states and with the prisons in these states to be able to offer the kind of expertise. And that is where we are ensuring that the states where these programs have been implemented, they are at least available and are talking to each other. And we have also offered that wherever needed, project or no project, we will be very happy to go and talk about our experiences and help in any way that we can. I think it's a big deal that there is now sustainable funding that is potentially available to be able to support these interventions across the prisons.
Thank you very much indeed. So inspiring words there, but I'm going to come to you, Clive, and ask you how you think screening and treating people who are incarcerated will support viral hepatitis elimination efforts, that ambitious World Health Organization target.
Yeah, I don't know how ambitious it is. It does seem a bit ambitious, actually, but I think it is vital. The more testing you do, the more cases you find. It's really that simple, which is, in my mind, that's what it's about. Test, 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 because it is a disease you can have not know you've got it for 15, 20 years unless you have a test. We find people who say, no, I've never used drugs. No, I'm fine. I don't need a test. We've somehow convinced them to have a test, whether it's through incentive or just through conversation, and they've tested positive and we're able to help them. Yes, we do target particular cohorts and we do target services, rehabilitation centers, and the kind of typical places where you might expect someone with addiction or whatever may have Hep C. But we also test the staff, and I've got a great story of us having an event and testing everyone. So we tested like 20, 30 people, and there was a quiet moment in which while we're there, we'll have a cup of tea with the staff and we'll have a chat. And I got chatting to one of the staff, offered her a test. She'd never had a Hep C test before, and it came back positive. And she was upset, but she was adult enough, professional enough to be able to understand that we can help her. And she asked us to be discreet. The only issue is when we test the staff, they don't get our support to follow it through. They are professionals. They need to get themselves down to heptology or to the hospital and they can do it themselves. But the fact that we found a staff member just through conversation, that was positive. So little stories like that.
Of course, the WHO target is to eliminate viral hepatitis as a public health problem by 2030. It would be lovely. And as you so rightly say, test, test and test again, but also educate and educate again. We've heard that from Sanjay. We've heard it from John. We've heard it from you. Speaking of which, John, I'm going to give the last word for you. How important do you think it is that everybody does this? What advice would you give to others who are looking to set up similar programs in prisons globally?
It's really critical that we include prisons. So our lessons in the Dominican Republic there is we did the large blitz. We found a number of cases. We got people into treatment, but we're now routinely treating, testing folks as they enter the prison. So it's become a routine test now. We're expanding to additional prisons. But the message is, if we look at the lives and the health of persons who are incarcerated, if somehow we don't see them as valuable or as important as others in the community, we will never be successful at curing disease. What was really remarkable to us in the Dominican Republic was the treatments were available through the ministries of health. Our challenge was to say to them, if we identify persons in the prison, will you also give them access to this life-saving medication? We were concerned that because we were talking about prisoners, right, people who are incarcerated, that that treatment wouldn't be offered to them. But in fact, they came back wholeheartedly to say, absolutely, we will give them the same quality access to care as anyone in the free world. And I think that's where this needs to move, that it does not matter whether you're behind prison walls or in the community. We need to identify this disease and treat it.
Oh, I've got goosebumps. What an incredibly inspiring way to end. Thank you very much indeed, John. And of course, thank you to Sanjay, and obviously thank you to Clive. You've provided your experience, your expertise, both professional and personal, and viral hepatitis in prisons, as you have just made so clear, John, is an issue without which we cannot hope to achieve those WHO targets. So thank you for listening. Do tune in to our next episode, where we're going to discuss how viral hepatitis can impact migrants and refugees and the structural and indeed racial barriers that prevent this population from being screened and, importantly, the last piece of the jigsaw once they have been screened, linked to care. So if you haven't already, please do subscribe to the Hepcast, and you can also leave a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts so others can find the show.